Welcome to LifeBeat. I'm your host, Chris Gass, Right to Life of Michigan's Director of Communication and Education. Joining us this week is absolutely nobody because I'm sitting here in my basement, in my office slash guest room with futon, and it's lonely here, but that's okay. Hopefully this is the last week, the only week and the last week that we'll have to do LifeBeat flying alone in 2020. If you've looked at the trends and numbers of the coronavirus, we seem to be getting past the peak now. And if you look at the model, here's some good news for you. If you look at the model that everyone's using to predict the numbers in Michigan, this is assuming the lockdown continues, but the projected deaths on May 1st are 0 to 2. So basically, the end of the pandemic if we continue the social distancing at that level. So what's going to happen? I don't know. We're about a half hour away from the governor's press conference here on a Thursday afternoon. And so at that point, you'll know the news, obviously not from listening to this. But I thought this week, since I'm all alone, I would go and do kind of what we used to do with LifeBeat, was a feature where we looked at an issue and looked at it in depth. And everyone's been following the coronavirus numbers lately, the trends, the models. It's actually kind of interesting. I mean, I'm a big numbers guy, and I like to do a lot of envelope math. And so it's been very interesting to follow everything with all the information we get in. And I think we should do that for abortion, because obviously we're all focused on surviving the pandemic, but abortion is still happening in the state of Michigan. As I'm sure you've probably heard, we've asked Governor Gretchen Whitmer to stop the abortion facilities, just like all other outpatient surgical facilities have been stopped in Michigan, and that hasn't worked. There's been some good news in other states. Texas was successfully able to shut down their abortion facilities. Planned Parenthood took them to court. The district judge there, federal judge, who is a reliable pro-abortion judge, wrote an order forcing the state to keep the abortion facilities open. They appealed to the circuit court there, and by a vote of 2-1, circuit court said, nope, Texas can close the abortion facilities. If we can restrict other constitutional rights, like freedom of assembly, in the midst of this pandemic, it makes no logical sense that abortion is somehow more sacrosanct than the Bill of Rights itself. Makes sense, right? I think so. Anyway, enough about the coronavirus. Let's get right into some abortion numbers. So when you're looking at trends in abortion, I think the great news, you look at the national trends, and abortions have been declining. They hit their peak in about 1980. And you saw a massive increase after Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton were decided in 1973. When Roe versus Wade was decided, there were fewer than 800,000 abortions in the country that first year that it was legal. Before Roe versus Wade, some states, even large states like New York, had legalized abortion, and there were a ton of abortions there. But if you're looking at just that start date of 1973, that first year, there were about between 700,000 and 800,000 abortions in the United States, and that number quickly doubled to about 1.6 million abortions in 1980. And at that point, that peak of abortions lasted until about 1990. And so one of the things, I'll get to that point in a second. After 1990, you saw abortions start to have a small declines, but these declines have added up over the last about 30 years. And today we are under 1 million abortions in the United States. Actually, we're under 900,000 abortions in the United States now, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Now, when we're measuring abortions, you have the Guttmacher Institute, which used to be formerly part of Planned Parenthood. They pretty much still are. They just don't claim them as one of their little side institutes. Just to give the Guttmacher Institute some patina of being a independent research organization, when it's not, it's very much an advocacy organization. That's their goal. Those numbers are taken directly from the abortion facilities, whereas most of the abortion numbers that are available otherwise come from the actual states and their state health departments, and those are reported to the Centers for Disease Control. Now, the Centers for Disease Control don't get information from every state, and they don't get entirely accurate information because not every abortion facility, big surprise, follows the law and reports their abortions. But if you look at a graph of the Guttmacher Institute numbers and the CDC numbers, you will see an almost perfect correlation. Even though the Guttmacher Institute's reporting more abortions every year overall, the curve of the line, individual years, it's almost a perfect correlation of increases and decreases. So we don't know really an ultimate number of abortions in the United States, how many have happened, but we can get a pretty good idea of those numbers of induced abortions. And one critical problem with the CDC numbers now is in, I believe it was 1998, California, one of the largest state in the union, stopped reporting their abortion numbers. And in the CDC numbers, you can see just that one year, a dramatic decrease of abortions. Now, back to that point I left hanging. So, one time, I won't go into who, but a journalist, a nationally known journalist, was making a tweet storm about these numbers and the CDC numbers. And her specific point was how Democratic presidents are so great because they reduce abortions more than Republican presidents. And one of the keys to her points was that in 1998, Bill Clinton engineered this massive drop in abortions. It's a miracle. Well, he didn't do jack squat. That was all California stopped reporting their numbers. So if you want to break it down by presidents, the real numbers, as close as we can figure, then you have to blame Jimmy Carter for an absolute massive increase of abortions from 76 into 1980. You would have to credit Ronald Reagan with stopping, with flattening the curve, the abortion curve, if you will. Then you'd have to credit George H.W. Bush for initiating this decrease, and you'd have to credit Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, and Barack Obama all with furthering the abortion decrease at a pretty constant rate. Abortion isn't that simple. The president doesn't wave a magic wand. I think you look at Michigan numbers and you can see where some of these impacts come from. In Michigan, we started tracking numbers in 1980, and they were following the trajectory of the federal numbers. In Michigan, we used to have taxpayer-funded abortions. And if you look at the Michigan abortion graph, in 1988, we were able to enact a ban on tax-funded abortions in the state. And abortions in just one year, from 1988 to 1989, and this isn't because abortion facilities weren't reporting, like California and those CDC numbers, abortions declined by 10,000 in one year. That is the impact of just one pro-life law banning tax-funded abortions. And since then, Michigan has had followed the national trajectory of declines since then. Obviously, ours is more dramatic because we ended tax-funded abortions, and just that 10,000 in the first year is amazing. If you look at that number and project forward that a similar proportion of abortions are not happening because they're not taxpayer-funded in the state, then we in Michigan, with just that one law, have saved an almost 250,000 lives. That's nearly a quarter of a million people in Michigan, or maybe they've moved to other states now. They are alive today only because of that law banning tax-funded abortions, which we could not get then-Governor Jim Blanchard to sign. Despite multiple attempts, we had to take a petition drive, take it to the people for signatures, what the other side calls undemocratic, got the law passed. Then the other side collected signatures to challenge that to a vote. And in 1988, during the election, guess what? Michigan voters, of course, don't want to fund fund abortions with tax dollars. And so the Michigan people voted overwhelmingly to make sure that our law went into effect. So obviously it was Democratic. We just had a problem with an intransigent governor who didn't give a rip. And the governor, Jim Blanchard, his career didn't last long. He said about losing his election to then John Engler, our governor, pro-life governor, for a very long time, and really the only pro-life governor in Michigan that we've ever had. You think about that. In almost 50 years of this issue in Michigan, we've had one pro-life governor, and everything we've been able to do just with all the governors that we've had that are not friendly or who are overtly hostile, like Governor Gretchen Whitmer is today. Governor Blanchard said, you can only say no so many times. Very true. So there's really your trends in abortions and flattening the curve, which in part was because of pro-life policies. What helped with the decline? In 1992, the Supreme Court decided Planned Parenthood versus Casey. It was hoped that they would overturn Roe versus Wade with that decision. They did not do that, and thanks in large part to Joe Biden. We'll get to that in a second. But the Supreme Court did allow such laws as parental consent, very important, informed consent. They allowed so many more positive pro-life laws to go into effect with that decision that we've been able, in a lot of states, to pass these, and that has had an impact on abortion rates. Just for example, teen abortions in the state have declined massively since 1990. And what happened in 1990? We were able to pass Michigan's parental consent law, which eventually became assured in 1992 that it would be unmolested by judges, thanks to the Supreme Court's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. In 1990, there were 3,820 abortions performed on women 17 and younger in Michigan. So that's when we passed our parental consent law. In 2018, there were 710 abortions. So abortions went from 3,820 before we had a parental consent law to 710. That's amazing. That's the power of a pro-life law. A simple principle that parents have the right to be responsible for their own children, and children shouldn't be able, we can't allow children to have surgery without their parents' permission. We don't allow them to get tattoos without their parents' permission. We don't allow schools to give children aspirin without their parents' permission. Why would we allow children to have surgical abortions? It's madness. But that simple law saved thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. As far as what led to the rest of the trend and the decline, you can look at multiple factors. You can look at the decline in just childbearing overall in the United States. You can look at the decline in, young people having sexual relations with each other. There's been very noted decline in that in recent years. Planned Parenthood and such, they'll always talk about how important contraception is to that, which you look at that and you always wonder, well, if we had contraception, if we had the birth control pill starting in 1960, why did we need to legalize abortion 13 years later, and why did it take 30 years for birth control to have any effect on the abortion rates? Because abortion was skyrocketing after Roe versus Wade was legalized. economic changes, you could factor that in. I think it's really hard to tease out any one cause. You can look at all of these and say that they had some impact, especially education. Just, talking about the abortion issue, and the pro-life movement really got serious about that about in the 1980s, about 1990, when they stopped trying to pass these constitutional amendments that weren't going anywhere, that weren't actually doing anything. And when the whole pro-life movement realized that we don't have the public support necessary for that in order to get a constitutional amendment protecting the unborn, we have to build that public support. One person at a time. And so you add all that up, and the great news is abortions have declined in the state of Michigan, in the United States, but you look at just the total numbers, and it's still shocking. More than 59 million unborn children have lost their lives to induced abortions since 1973, thanks to a few Supreme Court justices who decided that their personal opinion on the issue of abortion was more important than the Constitution itself. And making sense of that 59 million is very difficult. I would encourage you, if you want to get a sense of the scale of those numbers, when everyone talking about the coronavirus was comparing it to the flu and other causes of death and et cetera, if you want to get an idea of the scale of the deaths due to abortion, there's a great video by a gentleman named Peter Heck. He writes for a news organization that I particularly like. The founder is from Michigan. But he put a video out there a couple of years ago called The Sound of Abortion. And you might have heard this ad that we've run on the radio, or whatnot. It's a video, but really, in the beginning of the video, it tells you to close your eyes. It's really the sound of abortion, in terms of portraying the number of deaths caused by abortions by BBs. He's pouring into a metal can and he compares the deaths due to major wars in American history to abortion. And the video is several minutes long. Most of that is taken up just by adding up the number of deaths due to abortion. You think about it, the number of deaths due to combat in United States history from 1775 till 2020 doesn't even equal the number of, that 1.6 top peak figure of abortions in the United States, and that's just 1 year. You add up all those numbers about black abortions and how there's been nearly 19 million black lives have been ended to abortion, and you add up all the other causes of death in the United States. In terms of that have impacted the African American community, you add up all those deaths. Every single death of every single cause does not equal the number of lives lost to abortion in just the black community. That's insane. It's an insane loss of life. And so I don't know why we don't talk about that more. Abortion remains the number one cause of death in the world. China is a huge driver of those numbers, massive abortion figures. Abortion is still the number one cause of death in the United States. Now that it's dropping, maybe in a few years it'll finally get below heart disease and cancer, which kill about 500,000 to 600,000 people a year. And abortion is currently about 800,000 a year in the United States. We're pretty sure the number's close to. So we got a ways to go. Even though we see those declines, abortion is the number one cause of death in the United States. And I just think it'd be great if we all took it seriously like that. Well, a couple other numbers that I think you should be aware of that are really important when you think about the abortion issue. One number that we like to use recently. So you're talking about coronavirus and case fatality rates, how many people who get this condition will die from it. The case fatality rate of being alive in Michigan, being an unborn child, is about 20%. So in Michigan, about 20% of, even though those numbers have gone way down, and you think about where those numbers used to be, about 20% of the ratio of unborn children who are aborted to the number of children in live births is 1 to 4. So out of every 5 births, so we're not including miscarriages here, but out of every 5 births, 5 healthy pregnancies, 4 of those are going to end in birth, 1's going to end in abortion. So the case fatality rate of abortion in Michigan is 20%. And even though we don't have a good handle on the coronavirus numbers, that case fatality rate, I believe, is sitting somewhere around 5% of the reported cases. So, obviously, abortion is not the same as a pandemic. And obviously, all of us born people don't have to really worry about being victims of abortion because our lives are protected in law. We are not discriminated against in that way. So it is different. But you think about it, we've dropped everything that we're doing in the state on the theory that we have to protect lives, which is a noble theory, a noble goal, noble value, a way of life. We've dropped everything we're doing. I'm stuck at home right now. I haven't left my home except to go for a walk in weeks. A lot of people, even if there weren't that restriction, would be choosing to do that right now. Yet abortion is 4 times as deadly as the current numbers we have in the coronavirus. And if you figure it has about a 1% case fatality rate, you know, your odds of dying from an abortion after fertilization versus dying in this pandemic are about 20 to 1. The ratio is 20 to 1. You're 20 times more likely. That's a massive amount of life that's being lost. And I just wish we treated it seriously like that. And abortion is not just an issue. A lot of people think about it as a woman gets pregnant in college or high school, goes and has the abortion, and that's it. The repeat abortion rate is about 50%. So if there's 10 women sitting in an abortion facility, 5 of them have already been there. 2 of them have already been there twice. This is a massive cyclical problem that is very difficult to break. Half of women getting an abortion have already had at least 1 or more abortions. That is a serious, serious problem. We talked a little bit about racial statistics. Abortions are very much focused in minority communities, particularly it's Black women that have most of the abortions in the state of Michigan, which is shocking. I think Black women make up 14% of the female population in the state. We'll have a different number when we get the 2020 census done. But they have just over 50%, a slim majority of abortions in the state of Michigan. That's a hugely disparate number. And economics has a factor in that, no doubt. Economics has a factor in that. But we treat every other disparate number in our politics today as a sign of systemic racism. I shouldn't say we all do. A lot of people believe that any disparate number that you see it must be the result of racism. Well, we're talking about 19 million Black children who never had a chance to live. That's a disparate number, like none other. And Planned Parenthood still wants to portray itself as a champion of all people, particularly, obviously, women and minorities, when Planned Parenthood has ended the lives of more minorities than any single thing in this country. Why do we put up with it? Why do we refuse to talk about it? It's just so frustrating. Couple other numbers that you should know. Abortion continues to be an aging thing. We the teen numbers are way down. The largest number of abortions are continue to be shifting into the late 20s and early 30s age bracket. Here's a way to look at it. In 1988, that year that we had right before tax-funded abortions ended, women under 20 years old had 28% of abortions in the state. Women 30 years or older had 18% of abortions in the state. So under 20 was 28% of the abortions, over 30 was 18% of abortions. You flip that to 2018, and the number of women under 20 having abortions was 8.7. It went from 28 to 9, and the number of women 30 and older went from 18 all the way up to 30%. So the numbers have completely flipped. And really, the target demographic for an abortion is no longer what comes up, really pops into people's mind is a 20-year-old college, white college student. It is a 28-year-old, 28-year-old resident in Metro Detroit, black, lower income, and is already a mother. This is a statistic that really blows people's minds. About 65% of the women in Michigan who had an abortion in 2018 had a previous term pregnancy. At least one previous term pregnancy. And so that's always one challenge that we run into is, yes, there's many women who choose abortion because they don't know, haven't really thought about what the unborn child is. But there's a lot of women, a majority, almost two-thirds of the women having abortions in the state have already had an ultrasound with their previous child and have already given birth. So these are serious problems that need to be addressed. These numbers are encouraging because of the trends, but abortion is not going anywhere until we really address these issues. And so how do we address those? I think the basic thing you have to look at is where the pregnancy centers. We don't have as many in Metro Detroit as we have had in other parts of the state. And so we've had a lot of energy, and Right to Life Michigan has tried to play a part in driving more pregnancy care over there. I think that's an issue. Obviously, the issue of economics is important, although that's really outside of our realm. We can't really get involved on... And we can't really evaluate, you know, whether this Social Security change is going to impact the abortion rate or not. I think not talking about it is probably the biggest thing, is we don't talk about this problem. You can't fix a problem. You refuse to identify. And then obviously, you know, legality is a big issue. And if we were to make abortion illegal, no, abortions aren't going to go down to zero. Just like anything else that's illegal, the behavior doesn't completely stop. But abortions would massively decline. You think about that 1988 law that banned tax-funded abortions. A lot of those women who were using Medicaid to pay for abortion were lower income. And those women weren't able to have abortions because of that law. Now, we do it because it's just a conscious rights that I shouldn't be forced to pay for abortion, but it does have the effect of lowering abortions. And so imagine how much worse off Detroit would be in terms of population loss and shrinking if there were 200,000, you know, if you think about half the abortions in the state or Metro Detroit, imagine 100,000 fewer people in Detroit and how much worse problems like paying for the city's bills and utilities would be. So these issues are interconnected. There's a lot of problems, but we look at the trends. The trends are encouraging, and so we just need to keep it up. All right. I hope you enjoyed our deep dive into some abortion numbers, and hopefully in 2 weeks we'll be back to normal, at least as normal as we can be. Join us then. Have a wonderful weekend, and have a happy Easter.